Hello, welcome to a new segment on my podcast, the MWM podcast, by the way, that is located either on Apple Podcast or Spotify, most likely Spotify because I haven't checked Apple Podcast yet. Welcome to a new segment called Reddit Reads with Roku. I'm your host, May Rokeby. Roku is basically the simplified version of my last name. So, I'm gonna scroll through Reddit, see if I can find something to read you guys, and then I'm gonna give you my genuine reaction to it. It might be every other sentence that I read, a whole paragraph that I'll read, but I'll try to sound as genuine as possible. If you like this segment of my podcast, please feel free to tell me over on Twitter, on Instagram. Ooh. And if you want to give me some feedback, please go to my email where you can literally email anything, any topic, any comments, any feedback. I really don't care. That's official MWMpodcast@gmail.com. That's official MWMpodcast@gmail.com. And for the rest of it's probably official MWM pod or official MWM podcast. Please, for the love of God, send me something to talk about. I've been looking for hours. Also, if you want to kick off this Halloween season with the Backrooms, my best friend and I have started Sion's Glitch on Twitter. Sion apostrophe S and then Glitch. It's a 22-year-old male trapped in the back rooms. He doesn't know how the fuck he noclipped into this back room. So it's pretty active. At the moment, we're finding multiple back rooms and doing a lot of research behind the scenes. So if you want to take a look at that, that's cool too. It is compositely, like mostly an ARG type game. So if you're really interested in that or any unfiction series that you find either on Twitter or on YouTube, feel free to check out Science Glitch on Twitter. We're gonna get started. I'm literally looking for Also, I have a dog next to me, so like if you hear him licking or barking or doing all that jazz, it's just me waving his arm around. Okay. Let's see. Ooh, what the fuck? Some of them are two-sentence horror stories, so I'll probably I don't know. I'll look into it. Also, I'll probably read Am I the Asshole? I'll read some of them if you guys want that. But let's see. This person deleted their username, so yeah. This one's kind of deep. Kind of don't want that. This one is also from the No Sleep subreddit. This is also from the user Ashvik V. So if you want to go check them out on Reddit, that's cool with me. Ashvik as in ASH, VIK, and then capital V at the end of it. Well, let's get started. If you hear me sipping or eating in the background, sorry if you have misophonia, click away or skip the audio if you need to. Well, it really doesn't tell me how. Okay, I'm 4 minutes in. We're fine. Okay. I'm a 911 operator and I just had the most terrifying call. Bearing this job is kind of a burden because I get calls every day and sometimes it's just stressful. However, the last week had been very busy. There have been numerous UFO sightings here in Michigan, and people have been saying weird things that have been occurring. such as a couple of humanoids standing behind trees and observing us. I've always believed that these are just conspiracies started by madmen and probably even the government, just to get into people's heads, or try to get people's minds off of the government's response to the pandemic. At least that's what I thought until now. Now, whatever what I'm about to tell you is gonna sound like batshit crazy, but I swear that it's true. So I was sitting in my chair, relaxing to some chips and all of that stuff. I really didn't have anything left to cook for dinner. I really didn't have time. Each bite of the chip made an echoing noise through the building as I slowly devoured it, listening to the rain outside. Most of my colleagues had already left, and I was alone in the building. It was pretty dark outside, and the only thing that really illuminated the surroundings was the bright moon and the street poles. The day was less busy than usual. I barely received any calls. I was finally at a relief. That all the shit that was going on in the town was completely over. Up until the phone began ringing, so I quickly answered it, putting my chips down. 911, what is your emergency? Hi, I think there are some people robbing my neighbor's house. I just saw some people break open the door, and I think they're looting his place. All right, sir. Can you tell me your address? Yeah, of course. He proceeded to tell me his address calmly, despite the ongoing robbery next door. Bitch, I would have just. Okay, sorry. Thank you, sir. The police will arrive soon. Please stay on the line until then. All right. Is your neighbor all right? Or. Well, he's on vacation, so no one's really in the house. All right, sir. Can you describe what the robbers are doing? One sec. I listened closely to the noise from his phone, but I couldn't make out anything apart from the occasional loud breathing of the caller. They're like walking around, I guess. They sort of seem like they're searching for something, but can't find it. All right, sir. Try to stay low so that they don't see you. Wait. I think they're leaving the house. A few seconds passed by until I heard his voice again. There are four of them. Yeah, it's four. Can you describe their appearance, sir? One sec. Let me get closer. I heard the caller sh whoa. I heard the caller shuffle through the house, probably going to a nearby window to get a better view. Ugh. They took off. Sir, can you? Oh, sorry. They look off. Sir, can you please be more descriptive than off? Well, I mean, like they're tall. All of them are at least 6'8" or something. Okay, that's a start. What are they doing right now, sir? My heart began to pound. How the fuck is someone 6'8"? Exactly my fucking question. Why is that my question? Because there are a lot of people on the fucking ship that are very, very tall. I knew something was wrong from the way the situation sounded, but I tried to stay as calm as possible. They're saying something to each other. I can hear them murmuring, but I don't think they're talking in English. All right, sir. I just try to keep an eye on them and shit! I think they're coming this way. Oh shit, they're coming to my house. Sir, can you please check that all of your doors and windows are completely locked? My adrenaline began to hit. What the fuck was I going to do? I'm just sitting here trying to help a guy till the cops get there. Sir? He didn't respond. Sir, are you with. I'm here. Are all of your windows and doors closed? Can you confirm that there are no point of entry for the intruders? Everything's closed. I don't think they can get in. All right, sir. Now I need you to listen to me. Yeah, sure. I'm all ears. I could hear his voice trembling. He sounded scared shitless. Heck, who would have been scared if the robbers were fucking 6'8"? My fucking point exactly. Sir, do you have any place in your house where you can hide? I mean, I guess my basement. All right, sir. Please go to your basement as quietly as possible. Please, do not let them see you. Give me a sec. I could hear him moving as the floor made a couple of quiet creaks. Okay, I'm in. All right, sir. Try to be as quiet as possible now. They might be. The sound of a loud crash pierced my ears. I knew something was wrong. This guy was in trouble, and I couldn't even give him the assurance that the cops would be there in time because the roads are all snowy. This isn't Cali, this is Michigan. I'm completely stupid thinking that the roads are snowy, but I'm like, bitch, you're in Cali. No, bitch, you're in Michigan. We're fucked. What was that? I see. They're in. They broke into my fucking house. I've been doing this job for 2 years, and I've never had a call like this. Most of my calls were just the normal day-to-day crap, except for this, obviously. Sir, the police are on their way, and they should be at your house in 2 minutes. I just need you to- Shit! I think they're checking all of the rooms. Sir, please stay where you are until the police arrive. Yeah, all right. Sir, is there any weapon near you? Wait, let me check. I heard him shuffle through the room, trying to make no noise. Yeah, there's a baseball bat. All right, sir. Please try to use that and keep yourself safe in case anything happens. Yeah, okay. A few seconds passed without us talking. I sat in the chair biting my nails until I heard a sound. I'm sorry. Sir? I could hear him whimpering. I'm probably the worst caller you've had in a long time. It's like I shoved you into this situation. Sir, it is my job to do this. I know, but you probably would have had a better time, like a regular night, if it wasn't for me. I paused for some time. I mean, he was telling the truth. I would have had a regular Friday. I wouldn't have gone home. Oh, sorry. I would have gone home in a few minutes and binged some Netflix, but this is who I am now. I save people, and I'm determined to save this guy. I looked at the screen in front of me displaying the coordinates of the police squad car and the caller's details. Brody, I promise you that you're going to be safe. I hope so. Thank you for all of this. It's no problem, sure. He went silent for a while. I guess it was probably because the intruders were still getting close to the basement. They're trying to open the fucking door. This was it. I had no idea what to do anymore. Sir, please stay calm. Try to make no noise. If they get close to you, you just... I heard a huge thud from the caller. They got in. Fuck, 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 fuck. My fucking reaction exactly. I looked at the coordinates of the police car. It was at the end of the street. Sir, please protect yourself with the bat. Shit. They're looking through the whole basement. They're gonna come my way. Ha ha! Bitch! Bitch! Hold on for a couple of seconds. The cops are on there. What the fuck? Sir? Their feet. Ain't even touching the goddamn ground. My heart dropped. I began imagining a ghost just floating around the basement, but my caller just had to be exaggerating. Sir, please just hang on for a- Fuck! They're coming towards me. Fuck! By the way, this is all in caps. I can't really say it with my whole chest. My throat hurts. He began screaming, and I could hear footsteps approaching him. What the fuck is wrong with their fucking faces? Everything's pale. Sir, please calm down. I need you. They're not human. Police arrived at his house a couple seconds later, but there was no sign of him. However, they did find a circle-shaped imprint in the lawn of the neighbor's house. The caller has been placed on a missing list or missing persons list, but no one has come to spot him yet. He's pretty much deemed dead at this point. People think that the robbers killed him and hid his body. But I know what happened that night. Those things fucking took him. No. First of all, that's fucking whack, man. Why I could probably never be a cop. I'm so sorry. Sorry, I'm looking through the no sleep subreddit because I need more. I need more. I need more. Oi. I don't wanna. How long is this? Okay, this one's kind of short. Yeah, this one's kind of short. Ugh. So again, this is from the No Sleep subreddit by user Thrawn911. My mother thought she was speaking with me. She wasn't. My alarm woke me up in the morning, and I was still a student at the time, so I had to wake up pretty early. My mother was in the kitchen making us some coffee. She worked until midnight, so usually she'd arrive home when I was already asleep. Her question surprised me. Did you fall asleep quickly after I came home? She asked. I wasn't even awake. I fell asleep around 10, I responded. She looked at me like I was crazy. No, you were awake. I checked your room when I arrived, and we talked about school. Don't you remember? What? I raised my eyebrows. I've always remembered that I woke up in the middle of the night, but I wasn't sure if I was awake when she came from work or I wasn't. I don't remember any of this, Mom. I asked how many classes you will have today, and you answered me. It looks like you forgot. She laughed. It was a strange conversation, but then I went to school and had already forgotten about it. It started to get a little bit creepy when the next morning happened again with the same incident. You were awake when I came home at midnight, my mom said. Why didn't you sleep? I wasn't awake. I responded, drinking my coffee. You're joking, right? You told me you'll have a test today. No, I didn't. You might have some kind of memory problem, son. Maybe you should go visit a doctor. I'm 100% sure I wasn't awake at midnight. I was thinking about this the whole day in school. Maybe I had some kind of memory loss, but it was so strange, like it never happened before. And then I had an idea to make an audio recording of the night with my phone. I set it all up before I went to sleep, and I quickly fell asleep as always. When I woke up this morning, I immediately checked the recording. I fast-forwarded to midnight. I heard my own voice on the recording. Hi, Mom, my voice said. It was really my voice. Maybe Mom was right, and I really had memory loss. Hi, sweetie, my mom's voice responded. You're awake again. I hope you won't forget this conversation too in the morning. Ha ha, I won't, Mom. And if I do, you should send me to the doctor this time. Good night, son. Good night. Bitch. Fuck no. The audio recording was over, and I just sat in my bed, frozen and sweating. I had no recollection of this conversation. I was sure that it didn't happen, just like the previous 2 nights. When I walked into the kitchen, my mom looked at me. "You look like you just saw a ghost, honey," she said without a greeting. I don't remember anything from the previous nights. I even listened to an audio recording that I made during the night to make sure that I was awake or not. "I think you need to go see a doctor," she responded with a worried look. "Yeah, I know. I just hope it's nothing serious." Luckily, I could get an appointment with the doctor on the same day during the afternoon. I was there for about 2 hours. After that, the doctor told me my results. I don't know what I would expect, but the outcome frightened me. I was healthy. Like, I was 100% healthy. I had no memory problems. My brain was functioning correctly, with no medical conditions. I told the doctor what happened and why I was there. "That's strange. Maybe you were half asleep. That's why you couldn't remember what happened. But on the audio recording, I sounded like I was totally awake and conscious. Nobody can understand the human brain, son. But you are healthy, so don't worry about that." So I walked home. I was still completely confused. I was healthy, but I still couldn't remember anything from the previous 3 nights. Then it was such a strange feeling. I was thinking of visiting another doctor just to make sure. I arrived home and was prepared to tell my mother the results as she wasn't at work that day. When I opened the door and walked inside, I heard her talking to someone. That's strange. We usually don't have visitors this late, I thought. I also found it strange that I didn't hear anyone else's voice. Maybe she was talking to someone on the phone? As I approached her room, I could hear her better. "Yes, sweetie, we'll renovate your room as soon as possible," she said. "I still don't understand why you need an altar there." I started to freak out at that point. An altar? I opened her door and she looked at me, surprised. "Intruder! Who the hell are you?" At me. She looked to her left and spoke to someone, but nobody was there. "Son, who is this man? He's a servant of the devil? Oh my God." "Mom, what are you talking about?" I asked. "I'm your son. Are you okay? Stay there, demon!" She screamed at me again. "My son told me you were dangerous, but I am your son," I argued. She pulled out a kitchen knife from the table and pointed it at me. I froze. Is she fucking insane? "If you don't leave this house right now, I'll kill you right here. We'll kill him, right, son?" She looked to her left again. I had no idea what to do, so I just ran out of the room, then ran into the bathroom, locked myself in there, and called the police. While I was talking to them, my mother still screamed from outside, talking to me and the other me. She also kicked the bathroom door a few times, but luckily the door stood still. About 10 minutes went by until the police arrived. Motherfucker, I can't talk today. It seemed like forever. And when they tried to arrest her, she attacked them, but luckily she couldn't harm any of them. She's now in an asylum. Still talking to that imaginary me that she talked to before. She's crazy, and I don't know what caused her condition. One day she was fine, and then the next she tried to kill me while talking to someone in her imagination. And then I remember the audio recording. She wasn't imagining things. I heard my voice too. I went pale immediately as I remembered this fact. She was really talking with someone who imitated my voice. And that's when I realized I wasn't safe in that house anymore. And that is the end of it. The other you used your time at the dock to become you. You're fucking right. Sorry, one second. Sorry, I had to answer personal text message. I'm still currently looking for another one to. Oh God, there's one about a hamster. No, thank you. I don't trust animals. Okay. Why are there so many self-harm ones? The fuck, man? What the hell? Nah. Oh God, I'm so sorry. Oh, this one is fucking long. Nah, thank you. This is by user NS Lewis. This was yesterday. I'm a cop, and I saw a high school kid shoot oh hell, I don't even know what I saw. The Claremont Claws were up to 14 and 3, and 6 of those points just had been a run-in by my son Brandon. It was his first high school football game, and I was feeling good about it. Up there in the bleachers as the half show started. I had the whole night off, and my boy was kicking ass. And the first hints of the main autumn were in the air. I reached into my pocket of my sweatshirt to warm myself up just a little bit more. It's a little chilly. My wife, Linda, elbowed me when she saw me pull out a flask. Oh, relax, I'm on duty. Sorry, I'm off duty. Shit. No, I meant to pass it over here. That's my wife, everyone. I grinned. I looked around to make sure nobody was keeping tabs on the Claremont chief of police, and I took a quick slug, and then I passed the flask over to Linda on the down low as Louie the lobster took to the field. Louie was the team mascot. When I had gotten to Claremont High, he had been this fuzzy, big stuffed animal type thing, but a few years ago, some kids got into the basement and tore that whole thing up during the off season. So they rebooted Louie and ordered a new suit. And this one was a little bit more realistic looking and more menacing. Louie had an angry lobster scowl now, and his claws looked like red mouths filled with lumpy teeth. Those versions were ridiculous in different ways, and I thought one being way too goofy and one being way too serious. But then I didn't get bent out of shape about it like some folks did. It was a high school mascot, nothing to get worked up about. Down on the field, Louie was doing his best to do just that, get the crowd worked up, and he was waving all 10 arms around and snapping his claws like usual. In addition to the cosmetic makeovers, the new suit also featured some animatronics. Fuck, this is an animatronic story. I'm not okay with it. There was a kid in there doing the bulk of the work. Noah Fletcher was his name. I don't think I knew him before that night, but I later did some research on him. He was just a kid, just an awkward kid who spent a lot of his time online, who didn't really have that many friends at school. When people were surprised that he auditioned to be Louie, and even more surprised when he nailed the audition. He was a dork, Brandon told me after the incident. Like a cool dork, you know? He didn't look down at his nose at us, he tried. he tried and that made him cool, you know? Didn't just sit there and felt sorry for himself. He got in that suit and danced his ass off. The halftime show was wrapping up and the crowd was egging Louis's antics on. Another hit of whiskey and I was doing the same, up on my feet and shouting, "Go get 'em, Louis! Rip 'em to shreds!" "I'm sorry, I need a stretch. I've been sitting in this upright position for about 2 hours now." "Okay." And that was when Joel Klemetz climbed down from his seat in the third row and began climbing down the bleachers. I noticed out of the corner of my eye that I had run into him the year before I had pulled him over for driving 15 miles per hour in a 45 and found a half-smoked joint that he'd hastily tucked away in the crease of his seat. And now he probably is just going for a snack from the concession stand. Stricken with the munchies. I mean, I was off duty, so it wasn't really my concern, but something made me turn a little more in his direction and watched him. Some instinct that drained the warmth of the booze out of my body and left me feeling cold. Joel walked down from the bottom row, but instead of turning left to go to the concession stand, he turned right, making his way towards the 50-yard line where Louis was winding down his show. I stopped clapping and reached down to my side for my gun, which wasn't there, of course. It was down in my truck in the parking lot. And what was I doing anyway? Reaching for my gun because some kid was a little too high and couldn't find his way to the boiled hot dogs on the concession stand? At a fucking high school football game? "Gary," said Linda, "what is it?" "Hmm?" I looked at her. She looked a little scared. "You've got your cop face on. What is it?" "Ugh, nothing. Just some stoner and wanted to keep an eye on him. Make sure that he didn't get himself hurt." And I nodded back at him. Oh, sorry. I nodded back over at Joel's direction and saw him hop over that little fence down to the sidelines. I knew that something bad was gonna happen. "Hey!" But it was no good that I shouted. The crowd was applauding Louis's performance, and then I got a sudden unshaken feeling that even if Joel heard me, he wouldn't have stopped. He was on a mission, which meant that I had to be too. Joel stepped onto the field and started shoving people aside, making my way down there too. But I never had the chance to get over the fence before he pulled out a gun from the back of his pants and leveled it at Louis, at Noah Fletcher, and fired 3 times. "No, Louis. Sorry, hold on. I gotta take a sip of my coffee because I'm like, no." "Oh my God, no." As I leapt the fence, the applause in the stands turned to panic screams. I hit the ground running. Louis was on his back, spasming, his giant claws reaching up to the sky, opening and closing. Joel brought the gun to the side of his own head and crashed into him in an instant before he pulled the trigger. Shot went up into the twilight sky. I was on top of Joel now, pinning his arms to the ground as he looked at me with swollen red eyes. The grotesque smile twisted itself into a shape on his pale face. "I did it," he said. I punched him hard across the side of his head, and then he was out of it. Louis, I saw, was almost out of it. Maybe forever. Oh, sorry, was also out of it. Maybe forever. The fierce lobster had stopped snapping his claws, and some of his limbs were still waving around, but I knew that was only due to the hidden mechanisms. "No," Louie! I'm really upset now. At the station, I locked Joel Clemens in a jail cell and sent our dispatcher and assistant, Darlene, telling her to get some rest and that I'd man the phones. And then it was just me and the kid, still unconscious in the building. I sat in the office drinking black coffee from the pot. Bitch, I have coffee too, but I cannot drink it black. Then I sent Linda a few text messages letting know that everything was under control. It wasn't, obviously. I switched the video feed of Joel tossing and turning in his cell, burning with some kind of fever, and a series of text messages that I'd received from Bud Greenleaf. Bud and I hadn't gone to school together, and he was with the EMTs who lifted Louie, Noah, still in the costume, into the ambulance that wailed its way to the 35-yard line a few minutes after it was called. The text said, "Jesus Christ, Jerry, the kid is dead, and he died a long time ago." "Wait, that doesn't make any sense. He's decomposing. What happened?" "What the fuck? Can you come follow us? Meet us at the hospital? Come. This isn't right." I've been dealing with other things like panic crowds and a murderer, but I didn't have the resources to just look at my phone as the texts were coming in. But once Joel was finally in his cell, I read them uneasily and responded, "I'm tied up here, bud. We'll send some guys." If you hear weird noises in the background, it's my brother's dog. You ever get that feeling? Sorry, off topic. Do you ever get that feeling when you're reading a story and you have the whole thing playing in your head like it's some movie? Yeah, because that's what's happening right now. I'm really upset that Louis is dead. So yeah. I radioed in the three men that I had left at the football field. Four of us came together. The four of us together were the entire Claremont Police Department, and I told them to send two to the hospital and report back. Through the monitor, I saw Joel stir in his cell. I left my coffee in the office and went to wish him a good awakening. "So why'd you do it, Joel? Why'd you shoot Louie the Lobster? Some kind of grudge? Getting too much attention you thought should be yours?" Joel sat up in his cot and put his face between his hands. He started shaking, and I thought with sobs or remorse, but when he lifted his head, it was with insane laughter. "I did it. I actually fucking did it." I shivered. I just had dealt with plenty of violent drunks and even a few domestic violence cases that escalated into murder, but I'd never seen anybody positively ecstatic about taking a life. This was the deep end of things, and I didn't have my certificate to swim there. "Yeah," I said, putting my trembling hands behind my back. "You sure did. You killed a classmate. I have hundreds of witnesses, and they'll agree that with the both of us here, you did it. So why?" Joel stopped laughing and suddenly seemed very terrified. "Why didn't you let me do the rest? Why didn't you let me off myself? Because it's my job to make sure that people don't go around dying willy-nilly. Now, I've answered yours. Are you going to answer mine?" Joel shrugged. "I mean, I can try. But if you don't see it, oh, but if you didn't see it, you wouldn't understand." "Trying is good enough," I said, glancing at the nasty bruise that I left on his head when I punched him on the side. "Good," I thought. "He deserves worse than that." And if there hadn't been a crowd of people watching, would I have given it to him? I thought I might have in the moment. That wasn't Louis the Lobster, said Joel. No, I agreed, because Louis the Lobster isn't real. That wasn't Noah either. Huh? You hearing this, Sam? Sorry, the dog's name is Sam. You hearing this, Sam? Oh. So who was it then? Joel shrugged again. Like I said, you wouldn't get it if you didn't see it. You said you'd try, and you're in a lot of trouble either way. But if you try, it helps you out. The kid ran his hands through his hair and sighed. All right, you gotta smoke? No, just start talking. All right. So last week I was hanging out with Noah during lunch period, just sort of wandering the halls, shooting the shit. You two were friends? We were. We were best friends. So we were walking and talking, and somehow we passed the janitor's closet. You ever heard anything about that? I knew it about the janitor's closet. There were legends about it back then when I was going to Claremont High. And apparently those legends were still hanging around like ghosts. I mean, sure, I said, the janitor's closet. Nobody's ever been inside except that one kid who was never seen again, or that other kid who was also never seen again, or one from every graduating class, never seen again. And nobody could ever remember their names. Spooky stuff. But those are just made up stories. It's a supply closet that they keep locked up so troublemakers won't steal toilet paper. I mean, you're not wrong. You're clearly right. Oh, you're dead wrong about that, officer. I mean, that's what I thought too, that there was nothing supernatural about it. I thought it was funny that everybody was legitimately creeped out by it. So I made a proposal to Noah that we come back at night when everyone was gone and break into the closet. We'd stage some kind of scary scene and take a bunch of pictures of the two of us there, and it'd fuck with people's heads and maybe get us some popularity to have the balls to go into the janitor's closet. Joel started shaking again. This time he was sobbing. God. He wailed. Why did we do it? It's my fault, and it was a stupid idea. Any suspicion of the kid was jerking me around vanished, and even I was suspected of his story. I thought I was going to take a turn into the delusional. At least it would have been an honest turn. Wait here, I said. Then I went back to the office for a pack of smokes I kept in a drawer. I'd quit years ago, but on some nights when things in town got ugly, my faith in people got stretched thin. I still sucked one down, at least. In my office, I took a few moments to check if I had the ringer on, in case somebody was trying to reach me, and then tried to raise the unit I'd sent to the hospital on the radio. And when I didn't get a response, I felt a pit start up in my stomach. But I forced it to close and headed back to the cell. The kid was talking, and I had to keep him talking before we wised up and started asking for a lawyer. I lit a smoke and handed it to Joel through the bars of the cell, and he gave me a surprised look. And then he took it in a trembling hand. After a deep drag, he said, "Thank you. I won't tell your parents if you don't." That was another thing, his parents. I hadn't notified them yet, but I would have done so soon enough. I was surprised that they haven't even heard the news yet. I wanted Joel's story before they had the chance to get between us. So anyways, later that day, Noah made the excuse to go down to the school basement. That's where they kept Louis's costume. And he said that he had to go check on something, but really what he did was unlock one of the windows down there. That night we rode our bikes over and slipped in through the window. It was so easy. It could have been done so many different ways instead of what we did. We could have written messages on the chalkboards. It could have fucked with Principal Keeler's office. Anything but that fucking janitor's closet. Joel finished his smoke and dropped it into the dingy toilet with a sizzle and took a quick drink of water. So we headed upstairs and down the dark hallways, using our phones to light the way. But once we got to the closet, there was another kind of light. A green light seeping out of the closet through the gaps of the door. Noah saw it and wanted to call the whole thing off. And then I told him. He choked back a harsh sob and went on. I told him to stop being a pussy and that the janitor had just left the light on by accident or something. And then I went to work on the lock. I'd watch a whole YouTube video, and after a minute or two, I got it open. I was so proud of myself. Pride goeth before the fall, officer. Pride goeth before the fucking fall. We were going to scatter plastic bones and stuff all around and start taking pictures. That was the plan. But as soon as I opened that door, the green light spilled out. I saw that it was coming from a crack in the wall. At first, it was swirling everywhere like an aimless fog, but it started coiled together. Wait, it started co to coil together like a snake. Noah started screaming, and the snake of the light took its mouth and took its open mouth as some sort of invitation, and it wormed its way inside of him until it was gone completely and everything was dark again. I cleared my throat. I don't want to sound insensitive, Joel, but I have to ask. Did you maybe take some pills or smoke a little something before all of this happened? Joel shook his head. I'm not gonna get high before I do something like this. Break into a school? Are you crazy? It happened and I saw it. And after that, Noah wasn't the same. We got out of there fast, forgetting the stupid prank, and then we got back on our bikes. Noah made me escort him home. He kept asking what the fuck just happened and what the fuck had slithered up inside of him. I told him I didn't know. Maybe that's some kind of weird gas leak, or I said maybe he should go to the doctor to check up just to be safe. When we got to his house, I said good night and we went inside. He went inside, sorry. He wasn't at school the next day and I kept texting him and he didn't respond. I pulled my phone out and checked it again for missed messages. No word from anybody. God damn it! But then I saw him again that night at 1 a.m. in my fucking bedroom. I woke up. And there he was, at the foot of my bed, staring down at me. His eyes were glowing green into the darkness. Before you ask, yeah, maybe I'd been smoking a little bit of weed before bed, but Jesus Christ, not that much. I tried to scream, but I couldn't even open my mouth, so I tried to tell myself, it's just sleep paralysis, dude, just calm down. But I couldn't, though. Not when Noah walked over and started to stroke my forehead. His touch felt so real, cold. He leaned down and started whispering in my ear. And he said, I'm growing stronger again, and soon I'll be everywhere. I'll be in your closet, and I'll be in your mama. I'll be in the dripping of the faucet, and soon, very soon, my pal, I'll be dripping all over this world and transform it into a screaming hell that it wants to be. Do you see? All I did see, I saw my dad coming home from work and he was covered in blood. And he had just stabbed his foreman 63 times. He was screaming at my mom, demanding what was for dinner. she said that he was for dinner and then bashed his skull in with a meat tenderizer. I watched in fear and heard wails outside, human wails, people moaning in agony, and wails of sirens, and they were cut short by the ambulances that crashed into each other. Through the window, I could see a green fog overlaying everything, and I could see people running down the street, missing limbs, or the flesh frayed, oh, sorry, not frayed, the flesh flayed from their faces, and other people chasing them, and other people chasing those people armed with golf clubs and garden shears and guns. And I was a rational man and believed that at this point it was like a fever dream or a bad trip, but I still shivered. So you felt like you had to stop him, I said gently. Yeah! I mean, Jesus Christ, I didn't want to do it. Who wants to shoot their best friend? But that wasn't Noah anymore. That was some kind of demon or something. I don't know what it was. Just that it was evil and it had to be stopped. And nobody would believe me if I went for help. And I know you don't believe me either. I know I'm fucked. My entire life is fucked. And lit two more cigarettes, one for him and one for me. I believe that you believe what you were saying, I said. I know it wasn't easy for you to tell me that either, and I appreciate your cooperation, but I'm gonna have to call your parents right now and tell them what you did. And off the chance that they haven't even heard it by now, do you have their number? Joel gave me the number, then sucked on his cigarette in a gloomy silence. I left him in his cell. Back in my office, I sat down and waited for my heartbeat to slow. Was there some part of me, some little sliver of my lizard brain that actually believed it's that crap? To be fair, I would have believed him too. If there was, I had to push it aside and focus on the next steps. I'd call Joel's parents, but first I had to know what was happening at the hospital. I tried the boys over on the radio, no response. I tried texting Bud, the EMT, and nothing. The pit in my stomach opened up again, and this time I couldn't will it to shut. I dialed up the hospital and listened to the line ring. And I hung up and decided that Joel's parents could wait. I had to find out what the hell was going on, and if nobody would answer, I'd have to haul my ass over there and see the situation with my own eyes. I pushed myself out of the chair and took an effort. It took an effort, and my knees cracked when I stood up. But I was getting old and beyond tired. I scooped up my keys. There was a great crash outside in the hallway, followed by a harsh scraping sound. Oh God, I'm so sorry. I put my hand on the weapon strapped to my hip and hustled out to the door, sticking my head into the hallway only to see, was that a lobster tail? Damn it, it was. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. The door separating the public area of the police station was from the holding cells that had been shattered apart, and the giant tail was disappearing into the darkness left in its wake. I heard Joel scream, and I took a deep breath and steadied myself, then broke into a sprint down the hallway towards the cells. I nearly slipped and looked down to see that I was following a trail of green slime. The pit in my stomach turned into a gorge, and then, when I made it to the cells, it opened up into an endless abyss. Louis the lobster stood tall, with his scaled back facing me, snapping his formidable pinchers in the air. Joel was shouting in wide-eyed terror. Shoot it! Shoot it! Shoot it! My mind scrambled to make sense about what I was seeing. Louie, the lobster, mascot of the Claremont Claws. I knew that, but my son played for the Claws, and tonight was his first game, and also during half of that game, I watched Joel Clemens shoot three bullets into Louie the lobster, who isn't really a lobster but a boy named Noah, and that boy is dead. My EMT bud told me that. That was right, wasn't it? But if it was right, then what the fuck was this thing standing in front of me slapping its claws? Shoot it, please, wailed Joel. I drew my gun out because I didn't know what else to do out of any intention of using it. Halt, I said. Put your hands up. Louis ignored my command and began reaching his pinchers towards the bars of the cell. Jesus fucking Christ! Shoot it, shoot it, shoot it, shoot it, shoot it, shoot it! But I didn't shoot it. Ha! There was a boy in there. There must have been. Somehow he survived those bullet wounds. Maybe the costume had dulled their impact, and maybe they had just given him a heavy-duty drug at the hospital to jack him up. And maybe allowed him to break down the door in the holding area. Now that he was here to get his revenge on the assailant by frightening him, as improbable as all of that seemed, I had to consider that it was possible, and so I wouldn't shoot him. Louis couldn't do more than frighten Joel, right? Steel bars stood between them. I said, freeze! Put your hands up! Louis closed each of his giant claws around the four bars and snapped them in half with a metallic crunch. With his wiggling legs, he peeled them aside and it was creating an opening into the cell, and then he began to shuffle inside as Joel shrank back in a corner. This certainly was a good argument in favor of shooting Louis. God forgive me, I muttered and pulled the trigger, aiming at Louis's segmented tail. The shot landed and a spurt of green slime oozed out of the wound, but it was nothing to slow Louis down. Then it was too late. Louis was upon Joel, grasping the frightened boy with his legs. Joel let out a final cry as Louis opened a pincher in front of Joel's neck, and he simply said, no. And then Louis snapped his claw shut, and Joel's head toppled from his neck and down into the dingy jail floor in a gush of blood. His body slumped down beside it. So Joel's dead. And as I'm reading this, I'm imagining everything happening. And I'm over here like, oh my fucking, we should have just shot it. Even if we did, we should have kept shooting. I unloaded my clip in a frenzy, and Louis jerked with an impact of each shot, flailing his legs. And I was reminded grotesquely of his performance at the halftime show earlier that night. Only there was no cheering crowd and nothing to celebrate. Louis fell to the ground, supine, next to Joel's body, opened his claws one more time, and slowly closed them forever. Meanwhile, a hideous maw underneath Louis's twitching antenna. A hideous maw opened underneath Louis's twitching antenna, and I recoiled as a green fog began spewing out of it. I kept dumbly pulling the trigger of my gun in the substanceless fog, though the bullets were all spent. In terror, I remembered Joel's story about how the green fog had seeped into Noah's mouth when they had broken into the janitor's closet. I kept my mouth sealed tight and backed out into the hallway, but the fog wasn't moving towards me. It drifted over to the sink and swirled into the basin for a moment, then shot up into the faucet. I left that bewildering and gruesome scene in that jail cell and drove unsteadily into the hospital. I felt drunk, though the little whiskey that I had at the game earlier on had worn off a long time ago. Hospital parking lot was nearly empty, which I took to be a bad sign in front of the ER entrance. Can you not? I'm reading. I pulled in behind it and got out. A man was there, sitting on the curb, clutching his hair, and when I looked up, I recognized him with blearing eyes and a pale face. Bill Larkin, lead reporter of the Claremont Times. Bill, what happened? Bill shook his head and started to make my way past him, but he clutched my pant leg before I could make it inside. Don't. I'm sorry, but it's my job. I tore free from him and the doors slid open for me and I walked inside. I should have listened to Bill. The officers that I had sent in there were lying dismembered and scattered, their extremities flung far and mingled with what had been four to six other bodies. I saw a torso of Bud Greenleaf's ID card clipped to his chest. And I saw Martha Blanchard's severed head staring at me in amazement. She had been the front desk receptionist. I vomited and wiped my chin when I walked back outside next to Bill. I was here when it happened. I just hid like a coward, he said. There's no shame in that. You'd be dead if you hadn't. But it was like, you're not going to believe me. I know what it was. It came down to the station after it left here. This should be a national story. Hell, an international story. But if I pitched it, it'd be laughed out of my career. So don't pitch it. The thing's dead now, and it's over. All that's left is to pick up the pieces. I picked up the pieces. Oh, picking up the pieces wasn't all that easy to do, as I was found out soon enough, the horror was far from over. I spent the rest of the night talking with the families of the dead and doing my best to explain what had happened. Some of them had already heard, and it's from the witnesses at the hospital who have seen Louis unleash's terror. Some believe that Noah had been acted up upon some heavy-duty medical-grade drugs, and though I knew it wasn't the truth of it, I didn't try very hard to dissuade them. I didn't believe that even my abbreviated account at all was at that point, but they thought I was playing a cruel joke on them. The hardest call was to Joel's parents, who were out of town and weren't even aware of the shooting on the football field. I spoke to his mother, and when she finally understood that her son was dead, the phone carried her wails of grief from one side of the country to the other, and down deep into my gut. News of what happened had spread around town, but no further. Bill didn't even run an article on it at the Claremont Times. Oh God, excuse me. There was an unspoken agreement to treat it as an unexplained tragedy and nothing more or less than that. The town effectively shut down for a few days in mourning. And when it reopened, things were different. At first, I thought the mounting tensions were a result of the shooting on the football field, the massacre at the hospital, the unexplained nature of what happened at the police station. At Hannaford, people would fill their shopping carts without meeting each other's eyes or saying a word of greeting to folks they'd known or lived next to for years. It was like as if they all suspected each other, capable of harboring such unfathomable monster inside. That I thought was an understandable statement enough, and that it wouldn't last that long. But the tension began to bubble into violence, and fights started to break out nightly at Willie's Bar and Grill. They spilled into the streets and turned into brawls. Somebody even threw a brick through the window of Bob's Hardware. Car tires were slashed, garage doors graffitied. Down at the police force, I worked around the clock, keeping the peace up and ready. Waldo County agreed to send over two men as temporary replacements, but they were weeks out, and until then I was working 18-hour shifts. Nor did I get much rest when I clocked out. Sleep brought nightmares and nightmares of giant lobsters crawling into our town beneath the endless green fog, crushing buildings and people between their monstrous claws. And idle hours awake brought bad memories. Louis's carcass lying next to Joel's decapitated body, that hideous maw opening and spewing forth its evil poison. The violence continued to escalate, and it was impossible to keep it up, or just to keep up with it. Somebody burned down the Unitarian Church. People I had grown up with snarled at me and spat at me, calling me a pig. My nerves were raw, and I could feel that I could snap too. "I think you need some time off," Linda said late night after work. "This is eating you alive. Why don't you go somewhere for a week?" I can't," I said, pouring a whiskey. I looked at the glass for a moment, reminding myself that I had to be careful with that shit. I'd seen it get its hooks into too many people, like my old man. "Two drinks," I promised myself. "Two drinks." I slammed the first one down. "I know you think it's your duty to single-handedly save the world, but it's really not, Gary, and I'm scared for you. Something crazy is happening out there, and it's like something's in the water." I was in the middle of fixing my second drink when she said that. I froze, and the whiskey kept pouring into the edge of the glass and onto the counter until Linda gently took my hand and lifted the bottle. "Gary," she said, "you're not well."
Sorry, I had to answer another personal text. Like, there's something in the water. In the jail cell when Louis had died, the fog hadn't come after me. It had gone completely into the sink faucet. The thing had told Joel, "I'll be dripping from the faucet, and very soon, my pal, I'll be dripping all over this world and transform it into the screaming hell that it wants to be." We were a few miles out of town and had our own water well. So did our neighbors. And as the thoughts tore through my wrecked brain, I realized that the violence and the vandalism were mostly contained to the city limits. And despite that fact, that just as many people within it or within the town limits lived outside of the city. So it was in the fucking city water pipes, and it slipped into the faucet in the jail cell and swam against the pressure of the main line, spread out, splitting part of itself off into each branch, flowing in each home, pouring out into the shower heads and out of the kitchen faucets, into cooking pots, into drinking glasses. I had a desperate mental calculation and trying to remember if I ingested any of the city water since it all started. We had a commercial water jug at the police station. Did Darlene use that water or tap water to make the coffee? Christ, I didn't even know. Had I even gone to the diner and ordered a glass of tap water? I didn't think so. Where else? Honey, I said, I want you to think carefully. Have you drank any of the city water recently? What? I was kidding about there being something in the water, my love. I know, but I just think that maybe there actually is. So think, maybe at Claire's house, didn't you go there the other day? What? I mean, yeah, I went to Claire's on Monday for our book club, but nobody else showed up. Claire wasn't even there, so I left. Okay, good, I think. Anywhere else that you might have some water? I don't know, Gary, you're scaring me. Took a deep breath and looked at my wife. I didn't think that she was infected. She was just worried and had been almost supernaturally patient with me, but the infected weren't patient. Bran, I called. He's at a friend's house, said Linda. Then her eyes got wide. Oh my God. She scooped her phone up on the kitchen island and called her son. She held the phone up to her ear for a while and finally shook her head. He's not answering. Where is he? She told me, and bitch, I went off. Bitch, I would have gone off. Oh. Cedar Street was mayhem. A group of teenagers were overturning a parked car on the side of the road. I slowed as I passed them, shining my flashlight out the window looking for Bran. He wasn't with them. Fuck the police! Fuck you, little bratty-ass kid! Sorry, I'm sorry. Fuck the police! One of them shouted, and he flipped me off, but I kept driving, past an old man kicking a dog, past a pile of leaves burning on the sidewalk, past a tree with figures hanging from it that I hope were dummies, rather than human beings with burlap sacks over their heads. Finally, I reached number 88. As I pulled up to the curb, I saw a large bay window jutting out from the front of the house, and it was shattered, and there was a body lying on the ground with broken glass in the flower beds. It looked like a woman. I got out of the car with my hand on my weapon and slowly approached the body. Heavy metal music blasted through the broken window, and I heard something smash inside. Ma'am, I said. She didn't respond. I could see that it was Tina Godfrey, Brandon's friend's mother. I reached down to feel her pulse. She was cold and dead. I walked around and tried the front door, terrified of what I might find inside. It was unlocked, and inside the music was so loud it hurt my ears, and I was hit with a horrible stench, that almost made me spill back up the whiskey along with the hamburger that I just had for lunch. Brandon, I shouted. You there, buddy? The overhead lights were off, but I saw a flicker come from a room at the end of the hall, a strobe light. Oh my. Okay. That was also where the music was also coming from, so I crept towards it, drawing my gun and trying to steady my nerves. Brandon? Brandon stuck his head out from the room. Pops, he yelled, come join the fun. Are you okay? I asked, getting closer to him. What happened to Mrs. Godfrey? That wasn't me. That was Jason, he laughed. He threw his own fucking mother out the window. Can you believe that? And where's Jason now? He's in here. Come on in. I was close enough now that I could see my son's face as intermittent light hit it. It was covered in blood, and he was grinning like a maniac. Sorry, the fucking dog farted, you nasty. Blech. You want to try some, Pops?
try some what, bitch? He asked before bringing an arm out of the room and showing it to me. And it wasn't even his arm. It was severed at the elbow and had several bites taken out of it. I didn't know what to do. God help me. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. I told you, Pops, told you once, and I'm gonna tell you once again, this world was an inch away of being a screaming hell, and we're gonna give it that last little nudge, aren't we, Pops? Just a little nudge, it's all it takes. He sunk his teeth into the severed arm and pulled away a chunk of flesh. Okay, so that's no longer our son. I turned away and I thought about just leaving him there, going home and telling Linda that he was dead and that we had to go far, far away fast. And then I thought about actually killing him so that it wouldn't be a lie. For a second, I thought about killing my own son, and even if that wasn't really my son anymore, drop the arm and put your hands up in the air. I said, what are you going to do, Pops? Arrest me? He laughed, but did as instructed. I approached slowly, pointing my gun at him with one hand and fumbled for the cuffs with the other. I got them and dangled them in front of him. Put these on, I said. Or what, Pops? You're gonna shoot me? You don't even have the balls. I bit my lip and shot him in the foot. It would be a long time before he played football again. He dropped to the ground and howled in pain and rage. And then I slipped the gun into my holster and slapped the cuffs off him. Oh, he said, smiling now. Kinky. That is your father, sir. I grabbed the cuffs by the chain and dragged him down the hall as he snapped his teeth and spat blood at me. We made it outside and I thunked my son down. I thunked my son down the concrete steps and scraped him along the walkway until we got to the squad car. I threw him in the back and then got into the driver's seat and drove home sobbing as he told me how much he was going to enjoy eating me alive. Yeah, that's not our son anymore. That's a fucking demon. Back at the house, I went inside and gave Linda a partial account of what happened, while Brandon squirmed in the back of my squad car. I argued that we should keep Brandon in the basement, tied up and possibly gagged until we could figure out what to do. She refused to allow that, so I told her about the cannibalism. That's where our son is now, tied to a chair in the basement. Linda agreed to the gag, too, after hearing about the evil filth pouring out of his mouth for a few hours. As for me, I went to the computer and started typing up this account. I thought that maybe somebody would read it and be able to help us. Maybe somebody knows that this thing, or what this thing is, or how to stop it. And that was my hope. But just as I was coming to an end, I got a text from Darlene. The dispatcher assistant at the station. And it said, what do you think of the coffee yesterday? I tried something new. Made it with tap water. My vision started to waver as another message came through. We'll see you very soon in hell, Chief. Absolutely fucking not. Absolutely fucking not. Prayers to that chief of police, because I know damn well he also drank the coffee. Thank God I made the coffee with bottled water today, otherwise my dumbass is going straight to hell. But that is enough reading and passionate screaming into the void of my brother's house for a little bit. So I'm gonna go browse TikTok, answer some personal text messages, and probably I'll bring this back another time. Thank you for tuning in to Reddit Reads with Roku, and I will see you all in the next episode. Hopefully, it'll be about my book that is coming out somewhat soon. Probably not this year or the next couple of years. I still need an editor to look it over. So, yeah. A little update on myself before I end it here. I recently started talking to somebody that I haven't talked to in about a couple of months. And we started to rekindle our previous relationship and possibly take it even further. And we will be on the same ship during deployment, so I will be kind of stagnant with my uploads because I will be on a 7-month deployment. So if you don't hear me for 7 months or longer, I'm either still on deployment or I haven't really touched my podcast since then. Thank you again for tuning in to Reddit Reads with Roku, and I will see you all in the next episode. Bye bye!